Based on hundreds of millions of real-world tests, the experts at Ookla Speedtest have spoken. T-Mobile is now the best mobile network in America. So you can keep up with all the MLB action from the ballpark to the backcountry because they've got the most advanced 5G, the most towers, and a signal that goes farther than ever. Oh, and did I mention the largest satellite-to-mobile network? They're way ahead making sure that the fans experience every pitch, play, and post-game moment. So whether you're streaming the game out and about, checking stats on the road, or experiencing ballpark perks with Magenta status, you're ready to stay connected wherever your fandom takes you. Head over to T-Mobile.com/network to switch to the best network. For baseball fans, it's better over here. Based on analysis by Ookla of Speedtest Intelligence, data first half 2025, compatible device and plan required for T-Satellite. See details at T-Mobile.com.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Welcome to The Tool Shed, a podcast covering all aspects of fantasy baseball to help you win all of your fantasy leagues. From the MLB draft all the way to the show, we're here to help give you the edge in your dynasty leagues. Now, here are your hosts, Eric Cross and Chris Clegg.
Welcome in to episode 229 of The Tool Shed with Clegg and Cross. I'm your host, Eric Cross. And with me, as usual, is my 80-grade co-host, Mr. Chris Clay. Chris, what's going on, bud?
Not too much. It's just a constant grind of trying to finish the season strong. I've got a draft champions team that's first and pretty high in the overall, and it's hanging on by a thread. Me and Bob Osgood, co-team, that we've got so many injured players. So we're just kind of weathering that and hoping we get Woodruff back, like get Hunter Green back. Like six of our top eight picks have been injured and we've just been hanging on somehow. So I'm hoping we can finish the season strong there. But yeah, it's just the grind through September, but it's a fun one. And I can't believe it's August, dude. Can't believe minor league season has a month and a half left. Like, what is this?
I know, dude. It's crazy. It feels like it was just June 1st. Now it's, what was it today? August 6th. It's crazy that season's already in the final third. Minor leagues are in the home stretch. Fantasy leagues are in the home stretch. And yeah, it's got to finish out strong. You know, half people are over to fantasy football now, but not us. We are full on heading towards the finish line and hoping to help you all in all your leagues down the stretch, win some money, you know, finish high up for some bragging rights, whatever it may be. And today we're going to discuss some dynasty risers and fallers. You know, both have recent updates out over on DynastyDugout.com for Chris, ToolshedFantasy.com for me. So we figured we'd go through, talk about some notable risers and fallers here and, you know, looking to dig into the profile, see what's going right, what's going wrong, how we're valuing them moving forward, all that fun stuff. But before we get into the show, the usual housekeeping. You can find us on Twitter, Chris is at RotoClegg. I'm EricCross04. Show is at ToolshedPod. If you enjoyed this podcast, please rate and review. And make sure to check out both of our personal platforms that I mentioned, DynastyDugout.com and ToolshedFantasy.com, for more work from each of us, including all of our Dynasty Prospect and FYPD rankings. And again, the Dynasty rankings will be what we're focusing on here today, starting with the followers. We always like to get the bad out of the way first and end the program on a positive note. So let's start with some of the followers here. And let's start right with Eloy Jimenez, who, you know, didn't get fully hurt in that little skirmish with the Guardians the other day, but was seen limping away from the, or hobbling away, I should say, from the kind of the scrum there. And he's been, you know, when he's been on the field, he's been, well, he's been good, not great, but good, but just staying on the field, it's been a constant issue for Eloy. And, you know, I've tried to overlook it, at least to some degrees. Obviously, the upside is like, you know, outfield Pete Alonso, but man, Chris, it gets hard to overlook the, you know, the red flags here with his durability. And he's actually 315 plate appearances. That actually is pretty good for him this year. But, you know, performance, I think the performance is starting to catch up. I think all the injuries are starting to wear on his performance, and maybe he's not ever going to be that consistent year-to-year top 50 guy that we kind of thought he could be. So he's a guy that I've kind of moved near the back end of my top 100 now.
He's a really tough one to evaluate because of the injuries largely. And like when he's on the field, like his performance is fine. I mean, so far this year, he has 13 home runs, 315 plate appearances. So obviously you'd like to see more power out of that profile, especially with how hard he hits the ball. And 279 average. He's never going to be a big OBP guy. We've never really seen him walk at high clips throughout his career, but you know, the EVs are really good. 91.6. He had 10.7% barrel rate this year, which is actually the lowest of his career. And that barrel rate is still pretty solid, 70th percentile among all hitters. And that's a career worst number. Largely he's hitting the ball on the ground more. I mean, the launch angle's down to 5.9 degrees, which is much lower than we've seen in the past, excluding the shortened 2020 season there. And I think the biggest factor with Eloy is just health. Like, and we keep seeing this time and time again, like some guys just can't stay healthy. And you hate to throw the injury prone label on Eloy, but I think that's what we're looking at here. And like you said, I wonder if that is a driver in the performance. Like, he's chasing a ton. He's whiffing a decent bit. Like, the K rate doesn't really suggest that, but everything else kind of does. When you look at the zone contact, when you look at the overall contact rates, when you look at the chase rates, I mean, he's chasing nearly 40% of pitches out of the zone. That's really high. He's not making good contact on chases either. The whiff rate, I mean, his contact rate is in the 60s. That's not ideal either. And his zone contact below 80%. So those are numbers you don't like to see. And he's kept a decent batting average propped up despite that. So I think Eloy's pretty tough, but ultimately, like, he's got to stay healthy. Like, he's got to stay healthy in order to put the performance we think that can actually happen. So I've been like the top 75-ish range, but like I said, the upside is so much more. Like, we always thought this could be a top 30 kind of profile for Dynasty. And just hasn't worked out because he can't stay on the field.
Yeah, I moved him down to, he's currently sitting at 85 for me right now. And, you know, that might be a little low, but I'm just tired of waiting. You know, we've been waiting. You know, he had that really nice rookie year back in 2019. He had 31 home runs in 122 games. But since then, again, he just can't stay on the field. I'm doing some quick math here and how many games he's kind of, or what percentage of games he's been on the field for. So his debut, I say, yeah, he debuted an opening day. So over the last, let's see here, over the last 5 years, he's played a total of 392 games. And so that'd be three full seasons plus the 60-game season plus the White Sox have played 113 games this year. 659 total games for the White Sox since he debuted. And 392 of that equates out to right at 60%. So, yeah, I think when you get, you know, the same thing I dinged Byron Buxton for. I mean, Buxton has other issues performance-wise that Eloy doesn't. So that's why I have Eloy still a good amount higher than Buxton, who's not even close to my top 100 anymore. But yeah, at what point do we just not necessarily give up on Eloy, but give up on him being that? You know, again, I still think there's, if the health permits, I still think he could be a, you know, Pete Alonso type or close to it. But I think everything's just stacked up against him now. Like, he's can't stay in the field for a full season. I think this production is suffering to a degree. Again, it's not bad, but it's not as good as he's capable of. So I think he's a back end top 100 guy until he shows that he can stay in the field for more than an average of like 100, 110 games a year or whatever it is. So yeah, he's definitely falling down. Another one that fits that mold too. And I hate to put the injury prone tag, or really on anybody, but especially a guy, you know, these guys that they're this young. I mean, Eloy's 26 now, but this next guy is only 25. Actually, he's almost the same age as Eloy, but that's Jazz Chisholm Jr., who just can't stand. He's probably has worse durability than Eloy. Would you like, who do you think has a better chance of ever playing 150 games, Eloy or Jazz?
It doesn't look like Jazz right now, honestly.
No, it doesn't. And then he has a lot of other issues. Like, obviously, Eloy is a much better pure hitter. And obviously, yeah. Jazz has the speed that Eloy doesn't. But, you know, at this point, there's a lot of red flags, even factoring in some production issues with Jazz. Obviously, the power speed's great. Like, we know he can hit the ball hard. He can steal a ton of bags. But he's only been on the field for 124 games in 2021, only 60 last year. So that's, you know, a little over a third, and he's been on the field for 50 this year, which is a little under half of Miami's game so far. So there's another issue with, can he ever stay healthy? Is it one of those, like, he plays the game too hard, like the Byron Buxton thing? Like, I don't know. But outside of that, obviously the average has kind of always been right in the 250 range. Doesn't have quite the same upside with the bat that Eloy does. But I mean, until he starts proving to me that he can stay healthy, why should I have him as a top 50 guy? That's what I had him earlier in the year. I can't do that anymore. He's, again, he's kind of around that 100 range for me now too.
Yeah, he's one that certainly fell a bit for me just because, like you said, he doesn't play. And that's a big factor. You have to have volume. And we've seen it time and time again with him. I mean, injuries this year, injuries last year. I mean, he's got 200 plate appearances right now, and we're in August, and pretty much done. Is he's done for the year at this point? I don't, off the top of my head, I don't know, but I think he's pretty much done for the year. And
probably, you know, yeah.
Since 2020, we're looking at 915 at-bats, 10 plate appearances, 255 games. So, you know, the most he's played was 124 games, and that was in 2021. So it's just concerning with him. Like, what can he do to stay healthy? Like, the move to the outfield didn't really help, in my opinion, because now he's playing more aggressively. He's going and making plays. Like, I don't know. Like, it's tough on his body. And obviously the injuries have piled up. I'm trying to find a list of injuries of him over the years, because it's just like constant stuff.
Yeah, what hasn't he injured over the years is probably the easier question to ask.
Yeah, and so, like, I'm pulling him up right now to see all his injury history, because it's pretty significant, like missing games due to injury and being on the IL. It's just like constant stuff. So let's go back to 2021. The left hamstring, sprained right ankle, bruised left shoulder. He did have COVID IL, flu. Left hamstring again, back injury, then finally placed on the IL for strained lower back. Then he ended up being a stress fracture in his lower back last year. Then he was a bruised right foot. Then it was turf toe right foot, sprained right big toe. And now it's the oblique. Like, it's just always something, and it's not consistent other than the hamstring. So, like, he's just beat up all over, and that's not good at all. And that typically just doesn't bode well for, like, a player's career. And he can get healthy. Like,
right.
There's certain, like, there's a case for that he could get healthy and be fine. And I hope he does. Like, I really do, for his sake. Like, he's a talented player. He hits the ball hard, but there's still concerns with the profile, the swing and miss. Like, he's got some contact issues, 100%. And so, like, that's a concern of its own. Like, this year, running like a 65% contact rate, it's pretty concerning with a 75% zone contact. Those aren't ideal by any means. So outside the injuries, I think there's also those major contact questions. And,
yep,
you know, so there's a reason, like, he's dropped pretty significantly. And I think that's only fair at this point. I have him 68, and that still feels kind of high, honestly. Like, maybe he should be lower than that.
Yeah, I finally bumped him down. Like, I was holding on hope. Like, I think last update, let's see, where was he last update for me? Yeah, 42, and I now have him. I might have been a little bit too harsh with this one. I have him even lower than Eagle. I have him at 94 right now. So, yeah, you know, I almost wonder, like, Chris, would you be more concerned if it was like, now, let's say, you know, Royce Lewis. I think he's a great example. You know, Lewis has, you know, that, you know, multiple injuries of the same thing, that knee of his. Would you really be more concerned about one reoccurring injury or the Jazz kind of path where it's just like this and that and that and that and over there and over there? It's like all different things. Like, what concerns you more, like a guy that like Royce Lewis or a guy like Jazz when it comes to durability moving forward?
Probably Royce, just because like when he keeps having the same injury over and over, I think there's an argument for either side. But when someone re-injures something over and over and over, there's typically a bigger problem there. So that's concerning to me. And Royce also dropped a pretty decent amount for me, considering just can't stay healthy, you know?
Right. These are all very talented. Like every player we've talked about so far, all three of them, they're very talented. But yeah, you just, availability is half of the battle, and they just aren't on the field enough to provide you value. So they have to drop. And that's actually an interesting question too. I might want to ask that to like, you know, Nick Savalli or Jesse Morris, mm-hmm. or any of the other, you know, the injury, the actual doctors that know what the heck they're talking about, not you and I. You know, it'd be interesting to see like what they think on that, because I can see both sides of it too. Like, you know, maybe if Royce is going to get past the knee injury, and then, you know, he could be fine. Jazz, maybe it speaks more to his, you know, style of play. So a lot of factors in that. It's very interesting, you know, kind of discussion that I'd love to have with some more educated people after this podcast. But moving on to the next name on the list here, a guy that's not hurt. And, you know, it's funny, actually, I put out a tweet about the first round ADP from this year, from January through March, on NFBC Draft Champion Drafts, and where their current player rater is for the season off of Rasball. And the only one that was outside the top 50 that did not have to do with injury, because the other ones were outside the top 100, excuse me, because Judge was because of injury, Yoram was because of injury, but Turner was like 129 or something like that on the Rasball player rater. And it's just because he just hasn't been good. I mean, yeah, he's got 11 home runs, 21 steals. That's okay. That's solid. But this was a top three pick and a guy that was top 10 dynasty entering the season, hitting 238, 291 OBP, 378 slug. I mean, yuck. That's just not good at all. And you look at all of his metrics, and yeah, he's striking out at the highest rate since 2015, but it's not terrible. It's 23.6%. Barrel rates dipped a little bit, 6.2%, not terribly out of line with the last handful of years. Exit velo has actually gone up from the last few years by about, you know, or at least from last year, went up about half a mile per hour. So it's kind of odd to see him like this drastic of a fall off. Zone contact's a little down, whiffs a little up, chases a little up, but they're all minor. Maybe it's just the sum of the parts here and all these little issues kind of grouping together to cause this fall off, but Turner has been an absolute disappointment. So he's a hard one for me to rank, though, Chris. Like, because obviously he's 30 now, and we've kind of been a little bit weary of these the guys that have, like, you know, the speed being their number one tool as they get to the 30s. Obviously, that can drop off. So, but I don't think anybody thought that Turner's drop off would be this quick and this drastic.
Yeah, it's interesting. You look and has been a steady decline in zone contact since 2021. So, you know, he was steady 88-89% for most of his career. And then in last year, 2022, he drops to 85.9. This year down to 83.4. Still solid, but now we're looking below MLB average in zone contact when he was well above for contact. His overall contact rate, even worse, 79% in 2021. 75 last year, and now 71.8 this year. Chase rate, 30% in 2021, 36% last year, 39% this year. So contact trending downward, chase rate trending upward, results going backwards. Obviously not ideal by any means. We're seeing more strikeouts because of it. His strikeout rate is up to 23.6%. In 2020, that was 13.9%. It was 17% in 2021. And 18.5% in 2022. So yeah, you're right. These guys, this is why I try to get out early on the Starling Marte and Whit Merrifield type. And, you know, I didn't think that Trey Turner was that mold per se.
Right.
But we haven't seen anything to really suggest otherwise this year. Like, the numbers have been better the last 2 months, but then you look at July and it's gone to crap again. He's got 256 OBP since July 1. not ideal by any means. Three home runs, three stolen bases, like just rotting away in your lineup, not helping you at all. And you can't bench him because he's going to go on a stolen base barrage if you bench him. And you can't really trade him. Like, I've got him in Highlander, and I don't know what in the world to do with him because, you know, this was a supreme talent, and we just haven't seen that. So, yeah, everything's going in the total wrong direction right now for Trey Turner, and I'm highly concerned, to be honest with you.
As am I. I mean, before the season, I had – where did I have Turner? So I had – in my April update, I had him 10th, and in February, I had him 8th. So, yeah, he was right back in top 10. And then June, I dropped him just the 15. I wasn't overreacting too much. Yeah, he dropped below guys like Joe Ram, Vlad, Wander Franco, guys like that. And then in July, he moved down to 22. All right. Then there's several spots. And on this update here, I mean, right now I have him at 34. I mean, is that too harsh, Chris? Like, where do you have Turner? I mean, I think that's appropriate.
I have him at, it's not Justin Turner, I want Trey. I've got him at 46. So
no, oh, you dropped him even lower than I did. So, yeah, I mean, I always wanted to go lower than 34, but I'll probably keep him there for now. But, yeah, obviously this trend is getting quicker and quicker. I mean, he went from moving down 5, 6, 7 spots at a time, but now he's dropping like 15 spots at a time. And, you know, this continues, you know, end of season update, he's probably not top 50. I mean, he probably moves into like that, you know, 51 to 75 range. So, yeah, I don't see this. I mean, I'm like, ow. I don't think we're done seeing Turner being an impactful fantasy asset. Obviously, the speed is still there. He's still on pace for around 30 steals, still has an elite sprint speed, but the bat definitely is just kind of mediocre now. It's a little harsh. It's just not great anymore. Not that he was ever one to put up these massive, you know, Statcast numbers or anything like that, but when the bat starts going and the speed will probably continue to slowly decline. So maybe he's not a 40 steal guy anymore. Maybe he's a 20, 25 steal guy in the next couple of years. The values could keep going down. So, but it's hard to sell him right now because you're selling too low at this point. So, you know, maybe if you had him, Chris, obviously you do have him in Highlander. What are you trying to do? Are you looking to just hope that, you know, cross your fingers here and hope that he can go on a little bender here the last 2 months and trade him in the offseason or something like that?
Pretty much. Like, if I could get a top 50 dynasty asset for him, like, I'd probably do it right now. That was contributing right now. Like, I don't know. I'm just looking at, like, I have Gunnar Henderson pretty close, but I don't think anybody's trading Gunnar for him.
I get one for you.
Yeah.
And I think I know your answer to this, but I'm going to ask it anyway. Someone offers you Junior Caminero.
I'd probably keep Turner. Like, I think.
Okay. I thought you were going to go Junior.
No, I think that in the case of Turner, like, just think preseason what you could have got for him. And it's like, all right, I know that I'm not going to get that probably ever at this point, but I'm struggling to the idea of trading him for a prospect. Like, yeah. I'm looking for, I don't know, like, if I could get George Kirby for him, I would. Like,
that's good. That's pretty
this
good,
might yeah. be a crazy one, but like Riley Green, like Green's been on a heater. We'll talk about him in a little bit. I might do that. Like, if I could flip him for
O'Neill Cruz.
Yeah, that's what I was looking at actually in that range. I might do that as well. Like, Cruz's upside is pretty tremendous. So I might be willing to take that shot. It's a little more risky than I want, but I would do that over Caminero for sure.
Now, you said you didn't want to do it for a prospect, but would you do it for Jackson Holiday?
Maybe Holiday's been
absolutely
insane. Yeah.
There's the one. But yeah, it's getting tough with. Okay, I don't think I have Trey Turner anywhere. I might have had him in one redraft league this year, but I'm pretty sure I don't have him in any dynasty league. But yeah, he's getting hard to kind of rank at this point and see if he can put it all together here in the second half of the season and recoup some value. We shall see. Next one here, Josh Lowe, who, if you haven't heard the latest little fantasy baseball song or a music video, that's what I'm trying to say here, by Mr. Michael Govier, go check it out. He did this one the other day on Josh Lowe to a U2 song in the name of love. So it's really good, but it makes a lot of sense why he did it, because Josh Lowe is, I mean, 1 week you think he's a top 50 guy, the next week he's you're benching him because he's 2 first, lost 28 or something like that. And overall, you know, 14 home runs, 22 steals, 269, 315, 478 slash, 11.4% barrel rate, 39.1 hard hit. K rate actually isn't bad, 26.9%. And the walk rate's only 6.6%, though. So, like, you know, the metrics aren't terrible. Zone contact is, you know, below average. Chase and whiff are higher than you like to see. So that causes a lot of the inconsistencies. But it's one of those things where, all right, end of the season, the numbers, like, he's still on like a 20, close to a 20-30 pace right now with a two set right around 270 average. So I don't know. Like, I don't want to drop him too low, but I hate this profile. I hate the one where it's like he's dominating for a week and then he's ice cold for a week. Hence why I was never in on Adalberto Mondesi. That's like, he's like the poster child for this type of profile. So I don't know. I still have him right around 100 overall just because of the upside and the power speed he brings. And he's still only 25 years old, but this is a hard profile to like really invest in heavily in dynasty leagues.
Yeah, it is. And it's the volatility and inconsistency. And since June 1st, I mean, running a 32% K rate, a 272 OBP, and a 363 slug, just won't play. I mean, there's no way to put that in your lineup regularly when he's performing like that. And the 42% chase rate since June 1st, obviously not ideal. 64% contact rate and a 19.7% swing strike rate is just probably the worst, and I don't have the leaderboard, but probably one of the worst, top five, at least worst in baseball over that span. So that's not ideal. The power metrics have ticked down as well. It's, you just look at the rolling charts and it's not very pretty for Josh Lowe. So I'm having a really hard time with him. I put him in the 150 range and I'm not sure if that's even too, like, I probably should go even lower on him because it's like, just going to be so much inconsistency. It appears, it seems like he's going to be one that just going to have his ups and downs. He's going to be hot and then it's just going to go completely out the window. So you kind of, if you just pull up rolling graphs of him, it's just, it's not good at all. So I'm 1 foot out the door here where I can be, but he's a really tough one right now to evaluate.
Yeah. And I just found where I have him at 124 right now, a little bit lower than I thought I did, but it makes sense where I have him because I have him right back to back with Nolan Gorman, who's a very similar, you know, obviously different profiles, but similar in a sense of really good and then really bad. So, and we've seen that already with Nolan Gorman this year. And that's why he's been kind of fluctuating in my rankings as well. But yeah, Josh Lowe is like, this is just a profile that I try to, unless the price is low enough where it makes sense to invest. These are usually the profiles I just don't like to have too many of my team. Maybe one or two for the upside, but you invest in too many of these Josh Lowe types, you're going to not have a lot of success in dynasty leagues, that's for sure. Got a couple of pitchers here to round out the fallers. First, Luis Severino. Chris, what the heck has happened with Luis Severino? I mean, this is a guy that obviously there's, you know, he was out for a couple of years. You know, maybe it wasn't fair to expect him to jump right back in as like a top 25 starter. But this year after, you know, he had two decent starts to the year. And then since then, he's been absolutely horrendous. He has an ERA over 11 over his last 10 starts. Whips like 2.3 in that time frame. He's not striking out batters, but the velocity is still there. It's just, it's getting hard to even say, you know, just bench him. I mean, obviously you have to bench him, but at what point do you start moving on from a guy like Luis Severino? I hate to say that because we see the stuff. Like, I've seen it as a Red Sox fan. He was like the Red Sox killer for like a year and a half. Like, we couldn't touch him. He was so damn good. So for that reason, I'm like, all right, don't, you know, completely go way down my rankings with him, but this is getting really rough to watch.
Yeah, it's certainly been pretty rough. And you keep expecting it to turn around and it doesn't. So you look at, you know, the last few starts. I mean, it's like, okay, like I could see, like, there were some indications like post All-Star break. I'm like, all right, he can turn it around. And then he did for one star. I was like, okay, one earned through six innings, but he had 3K and three walks. So that wasn't great. And the next start was 5 2/3 with three earned runs, zero walks, 5Ks. And then it just went out of control against Baltimore at the end of July. Nine earned over 3 1/3, 5Ks. Not good. And then his most recent start against the Astros was four innings, five earned with 4Ks and three walks. I think that it's just completely lost mentally at this point. Like, he's just, we forget how much of the game is mental. and struggling with injuries and then trying to get back in your groove on the mound. And he hasn't been able to do it. And everything's just kind of suffered as a response to it. So Severino's always had the issue of where he's allowed hard contact. Like you kind of look and he's allowed on hard contact at a lot of points of his career. But this year, it's just like all the bad results against him. And a lot of it starts with his four-seam. He's leaving it over the heart of the plate. He's allowed 13 home runs to that pitch, and he's faced 151 batters. That's a pretty high rate there. He has a 370 batting average against. That's horrific. But you look at the heat map, and it's just throwing it dead over the middle of the zone. His slider has not been bad. I mean, he's not getting the swings and misses, but there's some decent location in the bottom of the zone there. So it's intriguing, but just location, like that's the biggest thing. And he's just failing to locate and then in process allowing hard contact and hit around and failing to miss bats. So I'm pretty out on Luis Severino at this point.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought up the slider because I was about to. And yeah, I agree. Like you look at the velo, it's like half a mile an hour down, nothing drastic. You know, pretty similar movement on it compared to last year. You know, slightly different, but again, nothing big. But this is a pitch that was one of the best in baseball for a long time. Like, let's look at the batting average against on a slider over the years. Let's start with like his first like really breakout year, 2017, 181. 2018, 192. 2019, I mean, he barely pitched at all, but still 154. 2021, again, barely pitched at all, but 167. Last year, 169. This year, 302 with a 528 slug and only a 23.6% whiff rate. And you mentioned the fastball is getting absolutely hammered. But like just going off of, you know, these similar pitchers to him based on velocity and movement, you know, take this for what it is, but it shows that three of the five that they show are two of them are Spencer Strider, and the other one is 2022 Garrett Cole. Like, it's obviously the stuff like is still there. It's just absolutely location, it's mental. So, I mean, if the price has dropped like drastically to the point where it's just super low risk, I'm not opposed to buying right now. I'm really not, because if it's to the point where the potential reward, if he figures it out to some degree, vastly outweighs the minute risk of, all right, you acquire him for maybe a prospect that doesn't work out, all right, you're not going to lose sleep over that. So, you know, it all comes on the price, obviously, as it always does. But if the price is low enough, I'd be willing to buy low just because I just don't think he's to the point where he's a guy that's a 7.74 ERA pitcher with a whip near two. I just can't imagine we're done seeing like maybe he's not going to be back to what he was back in, the, you know, 2018, 2017, but I still think there's a useful fantasy arm in there. And maybe we don't see that this year. Maybe it takes an offseason of adjustments and whatever else goes on behind the scenes. But I'd be willing to buy low on Severino. This next guy, though, I mean, he hasn't been as bad as Severino, but he's been pretty bad of late. And this is a guy that I was finally starting to like say nice things about. And then he starts putting up stinkers, another one the other day. That's Mitch Keller from the Pittsburgh Pirates here. I mean, this is a guy, I remember when we had that episode, Chris, but I remember we were asking the question, should he be in like the top 10 dynasty pitcher conversation? Because he made, you know, legit adjustments, you know, added a sweeper, all this good stuff was happening. He had, you know, a long string of success getting back to like middle of last year. And then ever since then, he's just kind of gone the wrong way here. Look at what he's done over the last couple of months. I mean, he came out 290 ERA in April. 3 on the dot in May, 3.56 in June. I bet we probably talked about him probably early June, if I'd imagine. And then July, 6.58, and then he's give up 8 runs in his five innings in his last start. You know, K rate's going back down to kind of where it used to be. So he's not missing bats as he was earlier in the season. So was that Keller a mirage, Chris? Like, do you think maybe we just kind of overvalued what we saw from Keller earlier in the year, and then maybe he is closer to what we've seen in the past? Kind of where are you at on him now?
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly a real possibility. He's been a completely different pitcher than he was. Like, if you look at April and May, and even it's really through May 20th. So through May 20th, he had 10 starts, 62 and two-thirds. It was a 2.44 ERA. It was a 2.66 FIP and a 3.01 XFIP. over that span, the walks and Ks had improved significantly, 31% K to 5.6% walk rate. Those were really, really good. But then the switch kind of flipped after that. And since then, we're rocking a smooth 21% K rate, an 8.5% walk rate, and a 5.92 ERA. And the FIP isn't much better at 4.91. So what's going wrong with Mitch Keller then? What's the difference? What did he do? And that's really what we've got to pinpoint, like what changed over that span, because he added, like you said, he added the pitch, he added the sweeper, and it was there. In July, June and July, he threw the sweeper more. That's what I don't get. The sweeper was good. You look at the overall kind of profile and you see a change in pitch mix, but it really was what should have been for the better. Like in July, it was less sinkers and cutters. It was more sweepers and more changeups.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
And it just didn't get the results. I'm kind of torn here of what exactly is going on. Like, I'm looking in a similar velocity overall. Like, his velocity hasn't really dipped at all. Spin rates are very similar. Looking at his movement profiles, all very similar month to month. And so it's like, is it just a pure fact that he's just locating it bad? And so something I have to do a little more digging into, but he just stopped missing bats. He has just completely just lost every game that he made. And the profile is just like, he's just going to be volatile. I think this is just a guy that's always going to be a volatile pitcher that ultimately sees all kinds of weird results like this, I guess. So it's interesting, but yeah, I'm kind of one foot out the door with Mitch Keller as well.
So what was that date you mentioned when you started talking about Keller? May what?
May 20th was his last good start.
Okay.
Or it was his last, it was like the last run of a start.
You know, when I wrote my article or when I wrote my blurb or section on him, my dynasty notes on Roto Baller talking good about him, May 24th.
Yeah. And then May 26th was his start that was really bad and it kind of went downhill.
Yep. I'm sorry if I jinxed it. I'm sorry, everyone out there that has Keller. But yeah, I mean, I think I did say at that point, like, I didn't like buy him as like an ace, but I was like, I thought he could be like a, you know, an SP2, SP3 for fantasy, like a top 25, top 30 type arm, but he's not even showing that. And his ERA has already ballooned way back up to 4.35 now with a 1.25 whip after that last blow up the other day. So yeah, it's trending the wrong way for Keller. I'm not like fully out. I don't think he's as bad as he was early on in his career, but maybe he's a guy that's kind of a 4 ERA type, kind of like middle of what we've seen earlier in the year and, you know, what we saw earlier on in his career. But that is the last faller here. Let's go over to some risers here, starting with a pair of Red Sox, Jaron Duran and Tristan Cassis. I mean, Duran finally starting to play a little more regularly here of late, which is definitely deserved. Now, he's been quietly really damn good. You know, I know us Red Sox fans that watch him every day, I've seen what this guy can do, but I think he's still a little undervalued in the second, the grand scheme of things overall. But he's hitting 308 this year, 357 OBP, 507 slug, 8 home runs, 23 steals, and 328 plate appearances. And Chris, like, he's getting back. I don't remember if you saw him back when he came through your neck of the woods back in, would have been like, what, 2018 or early 2019 or so. But he seems like he's getting kind of back to that Jaron Duran, the guy that was the one that was vaulting up prospect rankings. And yeah, he's still got solid power. I mean, he has the best hard hit rate of his career right now by a solid margin by about, you know, 9% over his rookie year. He's at 48.4 right now, but he's dropped the K rate for the second consecutive year. Still doesn't walk a whole lot, but zone contact's up each of the last 2 years. Whiff rate's trending down. Chase rate's trending down. Like, he's getting back to that guy. And if he's more of like a, you know, 12 to 15 homer type with 30 plus deals and a good average, I am fine with that because that's a top 100 player right there. Especially if you know if he's gonna be hitting leadoff, which he has been lately, and probably score a good amount of runs. So I'm with this current version of Duran. I love it. Again, this is the guy I saw come up through the minor leagues a couple of years ago, and this is a guy I think that could be a top 100 guy, maybe even top like 75 or so. It's even if he can get up a little bit higher in the power department, but even if not, I'm fine with this version of Duran. I think he's still a bit undervalued.
Yeah, I think it's possible that you're right there. He's done a lot of things well this year. He's made some tangible improvements, and I think he's just like gotten back to the roots of who he is. Like, he's not trying to do too much, and I think that's really the biggest thing. And he's getting the results. Like, he's just being the hitter that he is. He's hitting the ball harder. He is making more contact. He's obviously running. He's been highly efficient on the base pass, 23 of 25 stolen base attempts. So that's obviously encouraging. Running a 91% zone contact rate, highly encouraging. Still chasing, 34%, a little high, but he's making it work. Like I said, the strong zone contact kind of negates that a bit. And he's just lifting the ball a little bit more. The ground ball rates have always been pretty high for his career. But now we are seeing him run a 42% ground ball rate, which is encouraging. In doing so, the home run to fly ball rate is up. Everything across the board just looks pretty solid. So Duran is not going to be a superstar by any means, but he really does have his fantasy like use, I think. And he's somebody that I can get on board with, especially if you need speed. Like, I'm not expecting him to be a 300 hitter. Like,
no,
that's not the case. He's not going to be for his career, but he's still young. He's 26. He's come into his own. Like, this is prime time, like 26, 27, 28. These are prime years for hitters. And so I'm ultimately not surprised to see him taking a step forward in development. And yeah, I'm pretty in on him.
Yeah, I agree. I don't think he's going to be 300, but I can see like 275, 280. I mean, he hits all three pitch types well. Like, the lowest he has is 272 against breaking balls. I mean, XBA is, 274 right now. So kind of right in that range. And yeah, I think the profile definitely kind of warrants him being like a 275, 280 hitter with maybe 12, 15 home runs and 25, 30 steal. I mean, he's already at 23 and hasn't been playing full time the entire year. So let's say he can't be a, 40 steal guy. I mean, he's an elite sprint speed. He's in the 96th percentile. So, maybe, 15, 35 is within play here. So, yeah, I definitely think he's top 100 right now. And I have him, I put him 80. Where was he? Yeah, 81 right now. So, you can call that Red Sox bias all you want, but look at the profile and sit here and tell me that's Red Sox bias. And I think he's legit and he's made a lot of improvements over the years, and I'm definitely buying it. And same can be said about Tristan Casas right now, who was just named the American League Player of the Month for July, a month where he just went absolutely bonkers here. Let's see, he hit, 348, 442, 758 with 7 home runs in 77 plate appearances. I mean, the underlying metrics have always been there. Obviously, he's gotten better as the season wore on, but this is a guy that I was screaming from the rooftops until I was blue in the face early in the year to buy low on him. Don't give up on him. Still believe in him. And he's rewarding those that did, because look at the quality of contact is very good. 14.2% barrel rate, 47.7 hard hit, 91.8 exit velocity there. The walk rate has always been really good with him, and he's keeping the K rate in check. I mean, he was 24.2 last year. It's 25.6 this year. I think that's pretty fair for what he could be. He trimmed the ground ball rate exponentially. And last year, Chris, it was 56.6% last year. It's at a 35.8% now. He's hitting more fly balls, more line drives. Everything you wanted to see from him after last year, he's done. And he's done so with, slightly below average contact rates, but, they're still right in the, not bad range at all. Good chase rate, whiff rate isn't bad. So I think he's like a 2, maybe he's not 280, but 260 with 35 home runs and a bunch of RBI. I think that's what you're looking at with Casas, and I think he's a top 10 first baseman for sure, and maybe a guy that can even flirt with top 5 over the next year or two.
Yeah, he's made some really good improvements this year from the contact standpoint. I mean, with the kind of power he has, you can live with a 76% contact rate.
Right.
And it's kind of been climbing upward all year. which is encouraging to see as well. Just making more contact, chasing a little less. Like, that's really been a big factor. It's just not chasing as many pitches out of the zone. And that's been led to more success with him. He's got the big swing. He's got the power. Like, there's never any denying the kind of power that he brings to the table or has brought to the table at any point. And he's running a 50% hard hit rate since June 1st with a 15% barrel rate. Those are both really, really solid numbers there. And a 12 or 13% barrel rate for, excuse me, I was looking at his overall career, but 14% barrel rate overall. So he's a step up, but still been solid all year in that department and hitting the ball hard as well. So, yeah, I think Tristan Casas is breaking out. And again, young 23-year-old, I mean, it takes guys time to adjust to major league pitching, and that's what we're seeing him do. So that's certainly a bit encouraging to me. I know there's some split concerns on him. How would he be able to handle, you know, performing against lefties, and, you know, what would that look like? But it's been okay. I mean, there is a decent little gap in what he's done, but he's still running a 361 OBP against lefties this year and is a 33% K rate, which is not ideal. But when you're getting the production against right-handed batters, it all works out. So, you know, he's going to see enough righties to put up the kind of numbers that you want out of him.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I was looking at some of his numbers here over certain time periods. Since, let's see, May 3rd, so after 0-for-3 game on May 1st, he's hitting just .128. Since then, he's hitting .291. And since June 13th, which is 141 plate appearances, hitting .328, .404, .624. So, yeah, I think he's like this version of Casas. This is a guy I saw coming through the minor leagues. I saw a ton of Tristan Casas, both in AA a lot and out in the AFL as well. Like, this is the type of player that I thought he could be, and he's starting to turn into that. So, yeah, definitely buying this version of Casas, and he's probably going to continue to move up my rankings here moving forward. Next on the list here, going to Cody Bellinger, who, you know, is another guy that he's so up and down. I mean, this year he's been mostly up, obviously. 326, 378, 547, 16 home runs, and 17 steals. But it's kind of weird, though, Chris. You look at his quality of contact, it's down from last year and down a pretty decent amount. Barrel rates dropped 2.1%, down to 6.2%. EV average went from 89.4 to 87, which is below average. Hard hit rate from 38.1 to 30.9, which, again, below average. It's great that he's striking out less. He dropped his K rate 12%, kind of back down to where it was in his kind of peak years. But I don't know. I'm still not, like, fully buying in to this Bellinger. I think he's more of a sell high. I mean, I don't think it's fluky. I think he's made some tangible improvements. Like I just mentioned, dropping the K rate for one of them. But I think that it's because of what he's done in the past, that perceived value has jumped too high to the point where I think the perceived value might be in the top 50-ish range, and I just don't think he's there. I think he's more like top 100-ish range, so he's more of a sell high for me right now.
If you got top 50 value, I'd probably cash out. That's pretty good value for sure. But over the last 30 days, he's been the number two hitter in 5x5 leagues, which is interesting. So, like, Freddie Freeman's the only one ahead of him over that span. Over the last 60 days, Bellinger's been top 20 hitter based on standard 5x5 scoring. So that's obviously really encouraging to see. Is it just a hot streak? Like, is it legit? Like, those are all things that you really have to think about and dig into. But, like, is he hitting the ball harder? Like, what has caused this change over the last couple months? Well, you look and his exit velocities did jump pretty significantly in July. I mean, his average EV in July was 88.7, while still not great, it is better than his 87 that he's run all year. So it did take a little bit of a jump there. He's hitting the ball harder. His hard hit rate is up as well over the last couple of months. The barrel rate, like, all those things have been increasing, but, like, is it legit, I guess, is the question that needs to be answered. Can it stick? Because overall, like, we've seen the ups and downs of Cody Bellinger. And as you mentioned, kind of the overall surface numbers look good, but the underlying data for the season, not so much. But I will say, like, he has made major, major contact improvements this year. He has never had a whiff rate at any point in his career below 23.5%. So that would be, that was a 72.5%. Well, no, sorry, that's a 76.5% contact rate. Look, Savant does it by whiff rate, and then you have to flip it for contact rate. But this year, he has a 19.7% whiff rate, which is a contact rate above 80%, which is pretty major. That puts him in the 80th percentile among all hitters. It's almost like he has sacrificed a bit of the power to be more of a contact hitter, and he's running an 84.5% zone contact rate, which is the highest of his career by over 5 percentage points if you take out the shortened 2020 season. If not, that was a 4 percentage point jump there. So yeah, the gains in the contact seem legit, and I do think there's some like intentionality to it of him sacrificing a bit of the power to focus on his contact skills, and we've seen the results. He doesn't need to try to hit the crap out of the ball, and he's making it work. So if he can keep doing that, then I'm pretty interested.
Yeah, I think there's definitely something to be had here. I just think that perceived value has gone way too high on Bellinger. I have him right around 100 right now, and I think that's probably lower than most people would have him. So it all depends what you can get, but I want, you know, if I was like a middle of the pack team and had Bellinger right now, he's a guy that I would kind of just throw him on the block, like message your league or whatever, throw him on the block to see what you can get. He probably can get a pretty damn good return from a contending team right now for sure. Kind of another player though that's kind of not come out of nowhere, because we've known about him for obviously, you know, a handful of years now, and he's had some success along the way, but overall has kind of been lackluster up until recently. That's Ha-Seong Kim from the San Diego Padres. Look at, would you have ever thought, like, before the season, Chris, if I told you that Ha-Seong Kim was on like a 21, I'm just doing a quick math here, like 21-33 pace, what would you have said?
I probably wouldn't have believed you.
No, you wouldn't have. And the fact that he's hitting 287 with a 385 OBP, and that's really come on. You know, a lot of that's come on recently. Look at, you know, he was only hitting 177 in April, but since then, 276, 291, 337, 438 so far in August. Like, it's like every month is getting better. He's a 550 OBP this month. Yeah, it's August 6th. I get it. But like, the dude has been so good since really since the beginning of May, and he's hitting for more power than he ever has. I mean, still not running like huge, you know, the quality contact is still kind of below average in general. So that's why I'm not like kind of fully buying into this. But, you know, he's always had a great approach, and that's even gotten better this year. The walk rate has jumped a ton. K rate still right under 20%. You know, zone contact's always been kind of like in the mid 80s. Chase rate's down, whiff rate's down. Like, he's got a lot of good stuff going for him. I'm not fully buying into the kind of little power surge he's going on here, but I think a lot of the rest of it is pretty legit. He's got good sprint speed as well, 82nd percentile. So a lot of good in this profile, Chris, but he's a hard one to rank though. Where do you have him? I kind of put him in like the 150 range. Where do you have him right now?
Let's see.
I had a hard time too. I'm like, do I go higher or do I not? Do I go lower? But I ended up putting him right around I have 146 right now, to be exact.
Yeah, 173. It's a similar tier overall, though, like looking at it. Like, he's just a tough one to figure out, like, what's legit. So he doesn't barrel the ball all that well. He doesn't hit the ball all that hard. He's perfected the pull fly ball home run to left field. If you look at his home runs, they're all kind of, you know, gathered over there in that left field corner, just perfect like pull factor. So that's worked out for him. The contact's really good, so you obviously like to see that. But I don't know, I guess I have concerns about like what's sustainable in this profile. We know the contact is sustainable for sure. You look at his average EVs, they were pretty mediocre and then took a major step forward in July. Like, he was running like 85s and then ran 88.5 in July. So, you know, major jump there. You look at the barrel rate, like, it's been up and down, like month to month, just kind of inconsistent. The hard hit rate has been steadily climbing all year. It's dropped a little bit this month, but I don't care. It's a small sample. But yeah, overall, like, I think that he's mostly legit, but I also have concerns that his power isn't what we think it is, and he's more of like a 10 home run guy next season. Everybody kind of goes a little bit too high on him.
Yeah, I think that's pretty fair. I think he's a solid player. And I think he could be a 10-25 type with a solid average, but yeah, definitely not buying into the power. Like, how long can he perfect this? Like, he's doing it now, but this is kind of a hard thing to perfect year after year and do it at the level that he's doing it right now. So yeah, I definitely think there's going to be some power regression, but overall, I mean, again, the rest of the profile is, you know, pretty legit. So I think there's definitely some staying power. It's like a top 200 type of player moving forward. Next guy, Riley Green from the Detroit Tigers, who's finally, Chris, like, is he just finally turning into the guy that we thought he was going to be? I mean, K rate and whiff rates are still a bit high, though not terrible. You know, whiff rate's 28.8, K rate is 27. So those are definitely, you know, well below average, not terrible. And he's finally starting to get to a little bit of that power. You know, the hard contact rate is 49.5%, 12% barrel rate, 92 mile an hour exit velo, still hitting too many ground balls though at 49%, though that is down about 8% from last year. So a lot of good stuff here. And it almost feels like he's just scratching, you know, a tip of the iceberg too. I think there's, you know, ground ball rate gets lower, home runs go up. I think there's more to be had here. So do you have him top 50 yet? Is he approaching that range for you? He's still only 22 as well. Feels like he should be like 25 at this point, but he's still only 22.
Yeah, he is in my top 50. He's 45 for me.
There we go.
So when he returned from injury, he's been really, really good. Like, since he returned July 8th, we're talking about a 93 mile an hour average exit velocity, which is pretty, pretty elite. Running the contact, you said, still questionable. It's 69%, 76% zone. So that's not great. 30% chase. It's fine. But he's hitting the ball so hard, 54% hard hit rate. And that's kind of in line with what he's done all year. A 16.5% barrel rate, 93 mile an hour average EV, as I mentioned. So he's getting results because he's lifting it a bit more and he's hitting the ball hard. So those are encouraging things that I've seen in the profile. Obviously, you want to see him make a bit more contact. But, you know, again, it's a young kid adjusting to major league pitching. And he was super talented as a prospect, though today, as we're talking about him, he had a 0-for-5 day with 4K. So that's not ideal by any means.
Come on, Riley. We're talking nice about you. Do some good here.
Yeah, I'm pretty in on him.
Yeah, I got him at 59. I mean, I think obviously there's still going to be the swing and miss is going to limit him to a degree, and I want to see him obviously get that ground ball rate down. But I think this is a guy that if that happens, you know, something like 25-10 with a, you know, 270-ish average. I don't think he's 300, but, you know, again, I think he's more like that 270, 275 range. But, hey, 270, 25-10, that's a guy that's pushing, you know, top 50, depending on how many counting sets he can get around him in that lineup in Detroit. Which I think the most kind of hilarious stat he has right now, he has 25 RBI and 320 plate appearances this year. 25 RBI. Like, how many games does he play? That's probably what, like, I'm going to guess like 90-ish games. Oh, only 75 games. So, yeah, he's only got, you know, 53, 54 RBI pace. That lineup's just not good. Obviously, you never know what's going to look like next year. But, yeah, I think I'm definitely buying into Green for the most part. And I have him, you know, pushing my top 50 as well. Just keep it right there in the AL Central and go over to Tanner Bibee, who I still don't think he's getting enough love, Chris. Like, he's been just quietly doing his thing, performing very well this year. And, yeah, people are talking about him, but I think people are still focused on, like, the bigger, flashier names, like the Gavin Williams, the Bobby Millers. But in 17 starts, Bibee has a 3.14 ERA, 1.25 whip, a 23.9% K rate, and an 8.8% walk rate. Just, you know, again, he's not flashy. He's never been that flashy guy, but he's always shown they've got has like the high floor, you know, and the pretty decent ceiling as well. He's not like lacking ceiling either. And especially in the month of July, he had a 1.78 ERA over five starts with 33 Ks, the 10 walks, and 30 in the third. So, you know, K rate's gone up over the last, you know, handful of starts here. And I think he's, you know, kind of like a top. You know, I don't think he's an ace or even a number two, but maybe it's a good SP3. For fantasy, like a top 30, top 35 guy or something like that. But where are you at him on Bibee now?
I have him as my Dynasty SP 18.
Ooh, 18, okay.
He is overall at 71 in my rankings. Just so good. I think there's more to come that we haven't seen as far as strikeouts. Like, he's running a 24% strikeout rate, 8% walk rate. Like, those are all fine and dandy, but I think there's more in here when you look at the Arsenal and what he brings to the table. I mean, it's 95 to 96, like up in the zone, like good ride, getting whiffs. His slider has a 30.6% whiff rate. That's obviously great. Like the movement profile on the slider, solid. His changeup has a 42% whiff rate on it this year. Like, he just has a really well-rounded arsenal of pitches, and he throws all pitches to both. Like, he has four pitches he's throwing to both hands. Like, some guys are like exclusively going to throw their changeups to lefties, but Bibby's out here throwing it to both righties and lefties, and he's limiting hard contact with it. He doesn't get hit around much. He's deceptive. Like, the stuff just to me suggests that he's going to be a 26, 27% strikeout guy. Yeah. And maybe even room for more when I look at the arsenal and what he brings to the table. I'm rather in on this profile, and I think he's only going to get better. And I think that you look at the results now as a rookie, and it's like, dang, okay, like this is legit. So, like, I just see him just getting a little better each year, and I think the ranking's kind of justified based on his arsenal. So I'm in on him.
Now, this is not a direct comp, but does he have a little bit of a Zach Gallen-esque feel to him?
I mean, he could. I think that's fair.
I mean, I don't think he's going to be, you know, top 6-7 where we have Gallen now, but Gallen was never like the big flashy arm either, but has a lot of the same things you just said about Bibee. You know, good four pitch mix. Those are the both sides of the, or both handedness for hitters. So a lot of things Gallen's done. A lot of things I loved about Gallen too. So maybe I am a bit too low on him right now. I do have him. I just look for starting pitchers. I have him 29 right now. So, and maybe I am a little bit too low on him, but I'm still kind of tweaking that kind of part of my rankings here. But yeah, definitely buying. Like this is gonna be a good pitcher for a pretty long time. So definitely, I think one that's still a decent buy right now. I don't think the perceived value is quite caught up. It's obviously risen, but I don't think it's quite caught up. So I'd still see if you can go buy in your dynasty leagues for sure. Ending the show here with a couple of exciting young middle infielders, CJ Abrams from the Nats and Edouard Julien from the Minnesota Twins. You know, Abrams, he's still only 22. Again, he's another guy that feels like he should be like 25 or so with how long he's kind of been around. But over the last kind of since July started, he hit 327, 391, 500 in July, three home runs, 16 steals, and he's got kept that momentum going here in August with a home run and two steals in 23 plate appearances, hitting 304. You know, still a lot of the stuff that I had the concerns with is still there. I mean, the quality of contact's gone up a bit this year. You know, hard hit rate's up, barrel rate's up, you know, up to around 6%. EV's gone up slightly. It's still well below average, though. Still doesn't walk a lot, but you know, that speed is obviously elite. And he's starting to tap into a little more power to the point where maybe he's not more than a 260 hitter ever, but I don't think he's 300 by any means, but you know, maybe, I don't know, maybe 270. Look at the contact rates, above average zone contact, you know, better than league average whiff. Still chases way too much, but maybe he's 270 with 12 home runs and 30 plus steals. That'll still play. So I think he's definitely moving up my rankings here. But again, Chris, is he a guy that the perceived value is because of the name, you know, in the former elite prospect status where the perceived value might have jumped the actual value right now?
I don't think so. I still don't think he's getting the love that he deserves. I mean, he's made a lot of improvements with contact. You look at the contact increases month by month, and it's there. I mean, since July 1st, he ran an 84% contact rate and an 88.5% zone contact. You expand that back to June, looking at a larger sample, and it's still 81% contact and 87% zone contact. Those are both really, really good numbers there. Yeah, I mean, he's aggressive. He swings a lot. He has some chase in the profile, but the StatCast data has steadily improved as well. Like, you obviously want to see a little bit better. You want to see hard hit rates like well above 30%. He's below it, but we're getting there. And I do think that he's getting the most of his power, and he's making it work too. Like, he's not going to be a massive home run guy, but there is use in the fact that he can provide you 10 to 15 home runs and steal 30 bags. And with the contact rates, like, I mean, I think it's highly plausible that he ends up being a pretty decent hitter. He homered today and has two more steals. So four hit day, that's pretty impressive. He's just hot as all get out. And I don't think the I actually think that the perceived value is lower than where I'd value him right now.
All right. Interesting. Where do you have him ranked right now?
Put him close to top 100. Let's see.
Oh, I have him 140. He's actually back to back with Ha-Seong Kim right now.
Nice. Yeah.
So I just realized that.
I have him 108. So
okay.
Yeah. It's pushing it. But I think, I mean, you look at the second baseman shortstops around him, like, could I make an argument for him, like with Matt McClain and Ketel Marte and Tyro Estrada? Yeah, absolutely. So he's as good as all those guys.
Yeah, this is a very weird, not to mention, this is a very weird range of middle infielders. Like, I like McClain over him, and obviously I've always been pretty high on McClain, so I have him ahead. But there's all the middle infielders in this range are just kind of interesting. Like, I got Nolan Gorman kind of close to this range. Obviously, he's been up and down. Yeah, Tyro Estrada, guys like Tommy Edman, Christopher Morel. Like, man, he's back to being the old Christopher Morel. It's a very weird range for, you know, Volpe's dropped down to this range now. Yeah, it's kind of an odd range of middle infielders. But, yeah, Abrams, I think, has obviously there's a ton of upside with Abrams. Like, this is a guy that kind of thought was going to be the next Carl Crawford at one point, and maybe that's still there. I mean, obviously, like you mentioned, he's improving every month. So, you're definitely, you know, he's risen a ton up my rankings and probably will continue to do so. Maybe this ranking for him at 146 is probably going to be too low. We'll see. See how he finishes out the season. But to finish out the show, we got Edouard Julien, who's, you know, very different profile from CJ Abrams, but he's a guy that walks a ton, and he's sitting for a really good power. Like, we joked that this guy was going to walk during the AFL Home Run Derby, and he didn't fare well in that whatsoever, but got pretty good quality of contact metrics, 15.2% barrel rate, 43.2% hard hit rate, hit 10 home runs and 235 plate appearances. Hit 299, 389 OBP, and a 512 slug. That's all great, but there's still some big red flags here. Overall, 30.7% K rate. That is not good. You know, below average zone contact rate, below average contact rate, above average whiff rate, and they're just not playing him against lefties. Like, they are just refuse to play him against lefties. He has 29 plate appearances against lefties this year compared to 204 against righties. So that's a concern there. So I don't know, Chris. Like, I like Julien a lot. I think there's a lot of good here, but I'm having a hard time ranking him. Like I said, I have him right in that range. I think some might have him top 100, but I don't know. I'm having a hard time going top 100 on him quite yet.
Yeah, I mean, since he returned and started playing regularly on June 10th, like, he's played pretty much every day against righty since then. So 160 plate appearances there. He's slashing 326, 409, 536, which is solid. Like you mentioned, hits the ball really hard, has a 16% barrel rate, 44% hard hit rate, and 89 mile an hour average EV. The contact looks much better since he did return. He doesn't chase at all. He's, you know, high end chase rate or low end, but high end for percentile ranking. Like, he's a 19% chase. 83% zone contact will play there. Considering he doesn't swing and miss, like a 9.7% swing strike rate is pretty ideal there. He's not a 300 hitter. He walks enough where he could be a high 300s OBP guy, but he's still striking out 29% over that span. He's just one of those guys that we see that's too passive, that works too deep into the zone or in the counts, and then ultimately strikes out. And I think that's why his strikeout rate's so ballooned, because the swing rates are low. And ultimately, like, that does matter. Like, he needs to swing more at pitches in the zone, and he's just not doing so. So that's kind of my biggest hindrance, is a 41% swing rate. Not awful, but you obviously want to see a little bit more aggressiveness out of him.
Yeah, for sure. Let's end the show on a game of who you got. Edouard Julien, Nolan Gorman, who you got?
I take Julien at this point.
Okay, I have them. Actually, I have Nolan Gorman has combined those names slightly higher, but it's a hard one right now. How about Julien, or I don't know where to rank this guy either, Christopher Morel?
That's tough. I mean, I think they're in a similar spot. Yeah, I've got them in a similar spot, and obviously, I think that Morel has more upside, but he also has more risk too.
Yeah, I don't think I heard an answer there, Chris.
I'll take Julien.
Okay, me too. I think there's, I 100% agree. There's more upside, but obviously much lower floor with Morrell. So I think I'll lean the slightly safer, but still, you know, some risk in Julian's profile too. But all right, that's going to wrap up this episode. Thank you to all the listeners for tuning in again. We hope you enjoyed it. Make sure to check out both of our personal platforms, DynastyDugout.com and ToolShedFantasy.com, for more work from each of us. And join us again next time. But until then, everyone take care.